Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, back to school day. Don't you feel like you're going back to school, even though you're not going back to school? We spent so many years doing that. I always want to be going back to school on the first day. At any rate, we have a terrific guest this hour. Ken Rudin is joining us. We're a little bit late with our All Things Political segment, but yesterday was Labor Day and we were not here, and so we decided that we would do this program today because there is a lot to talk about. We'll be talking about the president going to Iraq for his trip yesterday. What's that all about? Of course, the showdown concerning Iraq and what our policy should be, which Congress will be debating hot and heavy in the next couple weeks. Fred Thompson, about to enter the presidential race tomorrow. Is he this knight in shining armor Democrats need to watch out for, or is he, as some people have said, less than inspiring? We'll talk about the campaign, which is in now full swing, even though it's already been in full swing for quite a few months. There's a new book out on President Bush, Dead Certain, that's being released today. Larry Craig resigns over the weekend, and Ken has written about that. Ken Rudin, did I tell you that, is our guest this hour. Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez gone. What does that mean for the Bush White House and all of the campaigning that's going to be going on for the next few months? Ken Rudin is our guest, and he is the political editor for National Public Radio. He directs campaign coverage for the network, and he covers all aspects of politics, the primaries, the national conventions, the general elections, the races for the House, the Senate, and gubernatorial races as well. He appears regularly as the political junkie on Talk of the Nation on Wednesdays. He does this It's All Politics weekly podcast. He writes the Political Junkie column, and he has been covering politics for other media places as well, including ABC News. And I always like to say that he has probably one of the largest campaign button collections in the whole world, 70,000 items. Much to talk about, and you're welcome to join our All Things Political conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Hi, Ken.
Kathleen, a pretty slow week.
Yeah, right. And now things are really starting up. It's September, and all these things happened last week.
Well, I mean, once upon a time, the political year would start Labor Day, but it would be the year of the presidential election. This is a year in advance, but of course, this primary, this battle for the nominations will be over, you know, earlier than ever as well. So
right,
you might as well start sometime.
May as well. Could we start with Fred Thompson, who's set to announce tomorrow? And I don't know a whole lot about him. I know a little about him. I hear mixed reports about him. Is he the guy that the Democrats need to worry about, Ken?
Well, more importantly, is he the guy who's going to rescue the Republican Party
right
from its doldrums? And that's what a lot of Republicans have been asking for months. There's been a long indications that there had been clear dissatisfaction among Republican voters with the current Republican field. Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, Mitt Romney, and the rest of them, and, you know, just questions about all of them. And so Fred Thompson was going to save the party from its doldrums, was going to beat the Democratic Party, who it's assuming it's Hillary Clinton or whoever it was, and keep the White House in Republican hands. The problem is, well, several problems. First of all, there was excitement, there was a buzz about Fred Thompson all summer long, and yet he just seems like, he's announcing tomorrow night at midnight on his website, and then he's going to Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, things like that. But a lot of people wonder whether he had a moment in the sun, he had an opportunity this summer to take advantage of the Republican dissatisfaction, and he may have waited too long.
Hmm.
We've also seen the fact that he didn't raise as much money as he would have liked. There's been some upheaval in his campaign staff, and of course, there's been, you know, whispering about his wife that she has too much control over what happens in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, he's a folksy kind of guy. It's kind of funny. He's a very good aw shucks speech, even though he's been a Washington lobbyist. He showed up in Iowa last week wearing Gucci boots, as Fox News pointed out. So is he really maybe less aw shucks than
right,
the FBI?
Right. Some commentators have said that he's less than inspiring on the stump. Would you agree with that, or do you think that folksy presentation will captivate Americans?
Well, I think both are true. I mean, I've seen him, again, not in person, but on TV, I've seen him give three speeches, and all left me underwhelmed, completely underwhelmed.
Hmm.
A lot of it was just like, we need change in Washington, and that would be the gist of his speech. And I say, I mean, you know, voters need more than that, but he still is like number two or number three in the polls, and perhaps maybe it's because he hasn't done anything yet, and people think, well, you know, the promise is real. But it's very interesting. He's announcing his candidacy on midnight Thursday, like early Thursday, conveniently right after another Republican debate that's going to be on Fox tomorrow night. So again, once again, he won't be able to get the tough questions. He won't
right.
be able to be compared to the other Republican candidates. Eventually, voters will have to make that comparison, and they'll have to make their choice. But again, if he was, you know, I mean, I'm kind of like wishy-washy about his candidacy, and yet he's still up there in the polls. So,
right.
So I didn't even think Giuliani would be the national frontrunner as long as he has, because he has so many problems as well, and yet he hasn't faded either. So, you know, stranger things have happened.
Senator Larry Craig resigning over the weekend. You've written about this. It comes at an awful time for the Republican Party. What kind of impact will it have on the party, or are we just going to forget about it by this afternoon?
Well, you know, I'm two minds of that as well. I mean, Larry Craig is gone, and, you know, there was tremendous pressure on him to resign. The Republican Party wanted him out of the way almost within minutes of when roll call broke the story. It's only been last Monday that roll call broke the story that he had been arrested at a Minneapolis airport in June for, you know, lewd behavior or just a misdemeanor charge, and then he pleaded guilty in August. But a lot of Republicans also remember what happened in 2006 with the Mark Foley scandal and the underage pages, and that many conservative Republicans stayed home. They felt that the Republican Party had lost its moral compass and didn't vote. And the last thing the Republicans needed, given the fact that the war was unpopular and President Bush is unpopular, and there's a lot of questions about its presidential candidates, is another sex scandal to just remind voters of you know, the so-called culture of corruption that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats loved to lay on the Republican Party in 2006, that it still continues to this day.
Yeah. What did you make of President Bush's trip to Iraq yesterday? Why did he go?
Well, I mean, he's doing a lot of things, setting up the General Petraeus report, which is about to come, you know, we're a week or two away from it. It's scheduled for around September 15th. I suspect it'll be closer to 9/11 than 9/15 for obvious reasons.
Right.
But the president, there is some indication, and especially in Anbar province, that there is some indication that the surge may be working in some local areas. Hillary Clinton even made the mistake, to the horror of many Democrats, that she acknowledged that there was some progress being made in Anbar province. So there is some indication that there are some gains, and by the president going to Iraq, he's just, you know, trying to make the case even stronger. But whether the American people are buying it, whether the voters are buying it, is another thing completely.
I was interested in, evidently this book comes out today, we'll try to get the author dead certain, this new book about the president getting publicity over the weekend, and the president saying to the author, the central goal of his remaining time in office, to get us in a position where the presidential candidates will be comfortable about sustaining a presence and stay longer.
Well, I mean, look, you know, there of course a lot. Most of the Democratic candidates that say they plan to get out of the, you know, get the troops out yesterday. Some more pragmatic candidates, like Hillary Clinton, has acknowledged that there will be troops throughout her first term, if not her second term in the presidency. So I think, like, you know, if you listen to Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and people like that, they say, well, you still have to, even if you're going to pull troops out, there has to be an orderly transition of doing so. And I think part of President Bush's trip was also to acknowledge that, one, yes, gains have been made, and two, perhaps if gains are sufficiently made, it would allow some troops to be removed.
Mm-hmm. Did you see, I'm sure you did, this wonderful piece in the Times, was it Saturday on Sunday, that looked at what's going to happen in the next few months in the presidential campaign? It went month by month and brought my attention to the things that I had forgotten about. Oprah Winfrey, let's talk about her having a huge party in her huge mansion in Santa Barbara for Senator Obama on September 8th.
Well, again, I don't know what that means. I don't know if voters in Iowa and New Hampshire will say, well, you know, Oprah Winfrey supports Obama, so therefore it's good news for me. But if there's a general unease about Barack Obama, if they feel that, you know, the questions about his experience, about, you know, Hillary Clinton has criticized him for being naive on foreign policy, somehow endorsements can make a difference. I mean, if not, look, the two things that Hillary Clinton is the reason she's leading the Democratic field is African-American voters and female voters. Mm-hmm. And I think Oprah Winfrey has tremendous credibility with both groups. And, if you know, again, will it be more than a 15-minute boost? I'm not sure. But, again, if there's questions about Obama, she will help erase some of those questions. But, again, does somebody in Ohio, does somebody in Iowa, New Hampshire suddenly change his or her vote because of that? That's questionable, too.
Right. Can you explain to me what the heck's going on with this Florida primary and the DNC saying, sorry, we're not going to sit you at the convention if you have your primary before a certain date?
Well, everybody wants to be first. Obviously, there are a lot of states that resent the attention and everything that goes along with Iowa and New Hampshire. The fact that they've been kingmakers, that a lot of times whoever wins in Iowa and New Hampshire, there's a momentum that the other states they get rolled over with the other states. You know, whoever wins there can win the nomination. A lot of states resent the fact that they are so influential. They resent the fact that they're back in the pack. So at least 20 to 22 states have decided to move all the way up to February 5th.
Incredible.
And that in itself is unprecedented. Usually the primaries are in March and in April, May. You know, you think of the famous Wisconsin primary where Eugene McCarthy beat Lyndon Johnson in 1968, and that was in April, and that was, you know, that was like the second primary after New Hampshire. So once upon a time, Wisconsin mattered and April mattered. But again, with states like Michigan, states like Florida, they say, why should Iowa and New Hampshire, who have such little diversity, be so crucial? So they decided to move up. Michigan has moved up to, so far, moved up to January 15th. Florida has moved up to January 29th, both states before that February 5th window. And both major parties, and national Republican and Democratic parties, said they're going to be sanctioned. And in the case of Florida, the fact that they moved up before February 5th, they say that they will not seat their delegates, their 200-plus delegates at the Democratic convention in Denver this summer. They say that they urge the candidates not to even show up in Florida to campaign there, and they're going to, you know, obviously they're very, very angry. They're putting their foot down because this is a process that has gotten out of control.
Yeah, they're not going to not seat this Florida delegation, are they?
Well, I don't know why they would do whatever they can to anger Florida Democrats, given the fact that Florida is so crucial. We saw what it was in 2000. It's obviously going to be crucial again in 2008. But they really feel that if they put their foot down, some of the states, some of this madness will stop. Now, it hasn't stopped. Florida says we're going to do what we want. Michigan says we're going to do what we want. And obviously there's going to be a confrontation looming down the road. But it just shows how this process has gotten so out of control and has got to be cut back and adjusted for the
right.
2012.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Ken Rudin is our guest this hour for All Things Political. He's the political editor for National Public Radio. He writes the Political Junkie column. You hear him Wednesdays on Talk of the Nation. And he has a weekly podcast, It's All Politics. 800-486-8655 is our number. If you would like to join us in Milwaukee, please call 227-2050. We have one line open right now if you'd like to join us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, the author of Well-Behaved Women Seldom Make History. Ken Rudin is our guest. Let's go to phone calls. Dave from Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. You know, I wanted to talk about Larry Craig, and when he and everybody is saying how he announced he's resigning and he's out of here, and when I watched him and listened to him announce this, I didn't get that at all. The first words were, "My intent is to resign in at the end of September," and after having to listen to this administration that we have, how words are used and how they are meant to sound a certain way, and after you go back and read them, you know something else is there. And I'm thinking they're feverishly trying to get rid of this guilty plea, because that is what all the conservatives are really hounding about. And he can get rid of that guilty plea. And do you think they're trying to do that so he can come out and say, you know, I didn't really say that. I said I intended to, but now I've gotten rid of the guilty plea.
I don't, only because, part of me thinks that that this guy, I mean, whatever he did in that Minneapolis men's room, airport men's room, is that worth throwing away 27 years of service to Idaho? I'm conflicted about whether the punishment met the crime here. But having said that, the Republican Party, as you acknowledge, Dave, that the Republican Party wants him gone. They want him off the face of the earth. They want to forget that he ever existed. So I think the point of his intention is to resign as of September 30th. Maybe he's feeling that, you know, maybe they won't even give him the month of September. But no, there's no question. He is gone. They don't want whatever he wants to do about his guilty plea, reversing that. It was just an embarrassing performance at a press conference, not knowing. But when you look at what he did, he was told that if you plead guilty, there'll be no, you know, nobody will know about it. So maybe you think, well, look, I'm embarrassed. I'm humiliated. I'll just plead guilty and it's over and nobody will know about it. So
yeah.
The point is he is gone and Butch Otter, the Republican governor of Idaho, is probably within a day or two of naming a successor. It'll probably be the lieutenant governor there who's pretty popular. They can't get rid of Larry Craig fast enough.
Thanks for the call. Julia from Wanakee. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I was just calling about Fred Thompson. I wanted to make sure that you told the story about Fred and his red pickup truck. Do you know that story?
Do you know that story, Ken? I don't know.
I do know that when he first ran for the Senate in 1994, again, it was the first time he'd ever run for office. He had been a lobbyist. He had been Howard Baker's campaign manager in Tennessee, but he was never a candidate before. And some of his advisors, I hope we're talking about the same story, but some of his advisors suggested that just, you know, get rid of the suit, get rid of, you know, get the plaid shirt out, get the pickup truck. And he won this upset election in 1994 by playing an aw shucks kind of guy. He defeated a sitting congressman, a well-known congressman, Jim Cooper, and he went on to serve 8 years in the Senate. But a lot of people feel that he would not have won had he not, as I said, got rid of the suit and picked up the pickup truck. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, he's an actor. And when he was doing campaign stops, a staffer would drive this red pickup truck, and then just out of town, he would get into the pickup truck and drive the truck into town and get out of the truck and give his speech and drive off and then hand off to the staffer. And he was renting it through the campaign, but after he won the Senate seat, he did buy the pickup truck.
Right, and matter of fact, he actually drove it to his inaugural when he was sworn in on Capitol Hill. He brought the pickup truck there. But, you know, I remember the Democrats back in 94 saying there's no way this is going to work. There's no way that voters are going to fall for this. And yet, not only did they fall for this, he was reelected in 1996. It was a short term. This was Al Gore's Senate seat. That's why he had to run again 2 years later. But he was extremely popular. Had he run again for another term in 2002, he would have won overwhelmingly. So he remains very popular in Tennessee. The question is whether the tactics, whether he can make the similar big difference in the Republican field.
The question is whether or not he's going to resurrect this red pickup truck.
He probably will. I mean, again, that's why it was so embarrassing when they found out that he was wearing Gucci shoes at the Iowa State Fair.
Exactly.
Reminded people
you have to be consistent.
Exactly.
So there's a phrase we have on the internet. It's called "It's okay if you're a Republican." I mean, Al Gore wore jeans and cowboy boots, and everyone was psychoanalyzing him. But Fred Thompson can put on his jeans and his boots and his rented pickup truck, and it never seems to break the news.
Well, except for the fact that everybody, as everybody's pointed out, he has a long career as a Washington lobbyist. Matter of fact, he's actually even lobbied for a pro-choice group, and a lot of conservative Republicans say, wait a second, what's his ideological purity on this? So, I mean, there are questions about him. They will come up. Of course, he's avoided all the questions because all he's been doing is so-called testing the waters. He has not appeared in a debate. He has not appeared for scrutiny by his other candidates. That will change starting Thursday, and we'll see what happens then.
Well, how would you label him politically? Is he conservative on social issues? Where is he on Iraq? He talks about being an inheritor of the political legacy of Ronald Reagan. What does that mean?
Well, I guess a lot of people compare him to Reagan only perhaps because of the acting. But, you know, Reagan was an actor who had some kind of an ideological direction. I mean, he was clearly conservative. Fred Thompson was a conservative senator for 8 years. There's no question about that. But he supported campaign finance reform, which a lot of conservatives didn't like. He was not as strong on some issues. He felt a lot of Republicans felt that he was a little soft on Clinton during the scandals when he investigated them as a senator. But he is a conservative. There's no question about that. He keeps talking about, you know, the flip-flop. You know, he alludes to the flip-flops of some of the other candidates, or the ideological faults of the other candidates, perhaps referring to Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney. But so the question isn't really that. The question is, the question about Fred Thompson has always been, will he work hard enough for the nomination? He always had this reputation during his years in Washington as being a lazy senator. He was never, you know, the type who just really had this fire in the belly. A lot of people have been surprised that he's running for president here. But again, given the fact that polls show that, that there's a tremendous dissatisfaction among Republican voters with the Republican presidential field, maybe there is an opportunity for him to take advantage.
You must have to work so hard to be president. I can't believe the schedules these men and women have.
That's why I wouldn't do it. A lot of people, Kathleen, as you know this, a lot of people have suggested that I run for president despite my criminal past, and yet I just feel that I don't have the time. Besides, I have to click buttons, and I don't know.
Exactly.
That would be a conflict of interest right there.
Yeah, well, you should run so somebody could start collecting your buttons years down the road, right?
That's all this country needs.
Yeah, thanks, Julia, for the call. Mike is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi. Ken, I have a question kind of like this. I was kind of wondering, what are the prospects of an all-New York State presidential campaign?
I love that question. You have Rudy Giuliani, who's the nominal front runner for the Republican Party. You have Hillary Clinton, who's leading on the Democratic side. And you also have the possibility of Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, running as an independent. I mean, there have been same-state candidates in the past, as you well remember, James Cox and Warren Harding in 1920. Kathleen, you and I were just talking about that the other day.
Right.
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, Dewey and FDR in New York. But this would be a three-way with all from the New York. And it's like one of those World Series, like a Subway Series, you know, either the Yankees and Mets or maybe Kansas City versus St. Louis for the World Series, and the rest of the country might fall asleep. But I don't think it happens. I ultimately don't think Rudy Giuliani gets the nomination, although he's still doing fine. Just the question is whether the social conservatives will buy. They'll trade off his credentials on national security and what he did on 9/11 and throw away the fact that he's pro-choice, pro-gay rights, things like that. So it's questionable whether he can survive it. So I don't think it happens, but it sure would be interesting to watch.
So who's got the upper hand among the Democrats right now? Is it still Hillary Clinton?
It is, but again, you know, we're talking about national polls, and national polls mean nothing 4 or 5 months in advance. We've said this over and over again. 6 months before Iowa last time, Joe Lieberman was a national, you know, front runner in the national polls. 10 days before the Iowa caucuses, Howard Dean was first, Richard Gephardt was second, and 10 days later they finished third and fourth, respectively. So the polls, I mean, she does have the name recognition, she does have a solid organization, she has tons and tons of money. But again, if John Edwards wins in Iowa and then he gets a boost into New Hampshire, that could change everything. I really think that we're not going to know what's going to happen until we see what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I'd hate to sit back right now and decide, you know, we media elites deciding who the nominee is before the voters even have their say. So I think, thank God for voters.
Or you wouldn't have a job.
That's right.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Our lines are open. They've been darn crowded. So if you'd like to speak with Ken Rudin during our All Things Political segment, we welcome you to do so right now. Matt from Lake Geneva, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was watching the Texas Republican straw poll with great interest over this weekend because, you know, it's a very populous state, and I wanted to see what they were doing down there. And it really turned out to be pretty bizarre what went down there. To top it off, Duncan Hunter was the winner of the Texas straw poll. This is a Republican Party, a GOP event, and they were expecting maybe 10 or 15,000 delegates. They ended up with 1,200 delegates. Is this the meltdown of the Republican Party? I don't know. But second and third were Fred Thompson and then Ron Paul. They were pretty close to neck and neck. and there was seemed to be some skullduggery afoot. They kind of made it seem in all their literature like the doors were going to open at 10 a.m., but in fact they closed the doors at 10 a.m., and I think they were there was a fear that they were going to be flooded with Ron Paul delegates, and they had some high hurdles, too, to get in there. You had to have been a delegate in the past at the state convention or at a national convention. They seemed like they were really trying to control it.
Well, that's a good point about keeping the Ron Paul people out, because there's no whatever strength Ron Paul may have among the grassroots, there's no way if they limit, and as you're exactly correct, if they limit participation in the Texas straw poll to somebody being either a state convention delegate or a national convention delegate, well, all these Ron Paul people are, one, not Republicans, two, new to the political process. A lot of them are just angry about the war, and they like his plain, you know, speaking style, and they like the fact what he represents. But if you want somebody who's been a Republican national convention delegate, well, these are not the Ron Paul people. But it's interesting that the winner was Duncan Hunter, who I think, at the last I heard, was still running for president. He's a congressman from San Diego. He's getting 1 to 2% nationally in the polls. He has not shown any indication of any strength in any state. And yet, you know, he won it with, I think, 460 votes or something like that. So they were trying to duplicate what the interest that the Iowa straw poll got, and I think they basically failed miserably. Most of the leading candidates just stayed out of it.
Thanks very much for the call. 800-486-8655 is the number. Ken, let's spend a little time talking about money. You've written about the Democrats vastly outraising Republicans heading into 2008. This is something different, isn't it? And how much more money do they have?
Well, they have, I think, 65% more money.
Wow.
That's a lot, and especially given the fact that it's always been the Republican Party with the money, and people say, oh, there you go again. But I think that's part of the enthusiasm or lack of same compared to in comparison between the Democrats and Republican candidates for president. The Democrats are optimistic about 2008. They feel like they have time and the issues on their side. Certainly the war, President Bush, are really weighing against the Republicans. And they have some rock stars running for president, whereas on the Republican side, they've been on the defensive a lot. Take a look tomorrow night when the Republicans debate in New Hampshire, see how many people mention President Bush. You may see more, actually, given the fact that the news out of Iraq, according to the administration at least, seems to be more promising than it had been. Whether it's really promising, it remains to be seen. But for the most part, they're running away from President Bush. They're trying to run away from the war. Certainly they know what the polls say, and that shows. Another good example is the Iowa straw poll. There were like 27,000. The last time there was a Republican open presidency was 1999, 2000. 27,000 Republicans showed up at the Iowa straw poll. This year there were just 14,000.
Oh my.
Much smaller number.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think that the Republican candidates will mention President Bush tomorrow night and say that the war is taking a turn here, or will they continue to run away from him?
Well, no, actually, I mean, having just set up the whole thing by saying that people are running away from President Bush, I think there will be some. If you look at the front page of almost every newspaper today and probably tomorrow as well, you're looking at the Bush trip to Iraq, you're looking at perhaps local gains, in some local provinces, things like that. So I think they feel that they have to, you know, it's better to run attacking the Democrats rather than run away from the Republican administration, and I assume that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. We go next to Joe from Fox Point. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. Good morning, Kathleen. Great show. A question about the Fred Thompson campaign. I have been reading some viewpoint about the way he has delayed his formal announcement allows him to not report any campaign spending until January of 2008.
That is correct.
Is that right? And that seems kind of a strange, maybe devious way to proceed.
Well, of course, they did. You know, with the testing of the wards, you only have to announce, you don't have to have stringent reporting details like you have if you were an active candidate or even exploratory candidacy. A testing the wards candidacy by FEC rules means you don't have the same kind of reporting deadlines and structures. So, he only raised $3 million and change in the month of June, which is far less than everybody expected. And now, because of September, if he delays it after, I think if he delays it after September 5th, which he is doing, by doing it September 6th, it pushes it out beyond September 15th, the deadline, and therefore he doesn't have to report until January. And, of course, by then we'll know if Fred Thompson is for real or not. Some people think that it's a very smart strategy, given the fact that he spent very little money and yet he's doing very well in the polls. The other way of looking at it is he's almost too cutesy about it, and you know he could hide whatever faults and problems with the campaign until January.
Right. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thanks, Joel. Brad from Dalsman. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Kathleen. Great show. It's going to be a hot day today in Wisconsin, and the global warming and the environment seem to creep back into the political dialogue. How important do you think that's going to be, and where do the candidates stand on global warming and other big environmental issues?
You know, I wish I had a more informed answer. I mean, other than Al Gore making his tour and talking about it incessantly, and with great reception from voters, it doesn't seem to be an issue that people are talking about. I mean, you'll see it coming up more in Democratic debates than Republican debates. But for the most part, it was really a Gore issue that other people are not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just trying to think of the last time I heard, you know, Edwards, Obama, Hillary Clinton talk about stuff that hasn't been on the top of their agenda.
Well, during their YouTube debate, it was discussed. I wouldn't say extensively, but it was certainly discussed by all the candidates.
It was because, it's interesting to Brad. It's probably interesting to the normal voters out there who were just concerned about what's going on here. But having, other than having their hand being forced by, you know, Joe Q citizen questions in a YouTube debate,
right,
it's really not coming up on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Brad would like for it to be, right, Brad?
Absolutely. Well, how about even energy independence? You know, that's...
Well, they do talk about that, but they talk about that in the most vaguest of terms. It's just that, you know, I mean, I've not seen anything, you know, if you want to talk about raising gasoline tax and things like that, you know, they put a kibosh on that almost immediately, although John Edwards has intimated that he would be receptive to that. But people are so scared to death of being, you know, attacked as that Walter Mondale pro-tax, Democrat, that they're very, very cautious about that. And, you know, which is a shame because it's obviously, you know, everybody can talk about Iraq and everybody can talk about immigration, but there are other things that affect not only today and tomorrow, but our children and grandchildren, and certainly nothing more than environment.
Right. Thanks so much for the call, Brad. So what about Al Gore? Is he out? Could he be in?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's out.
It's like, you know, I got an email to my political junkie column the other day and said, what's going on with Wesley Clark? And the answer is nothing.
I mean,
these are people, you know... It's one thing to have a national reputation, and certainly Al Gore wouldn't have to campaign as hard as other candidates, but ultimately you still have to raise the money, you still have to have organizational troops on the ground, and Gore has neither. I don't think really Gore has any... I mean, everybody talks about, well, you know, he's put on weight. I mean, we've got to talk about something more than Al Gore's weight. We've got to talk about whether he has the fire in the belly, and you know, something... He has raised the issue that Brad brought up right before on global warming and the environment. Whether the candidates are refuse to talk about it, that's unfortunate. But I think Gore, even as a non-candidate, has made a difference.
Lynn is next from Mizamani. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that in addition to Senator Craig's resignation last week, the Attorney General of the United States resigned.
Yeah.
And that seems to have been a story absolutely lost. I picked up the New York Times on Sunday, and the Week in Review had, I believe, two or three articles on Craig and didn't mention Gonzalez. And
you know something?
That's more of a comment on the media, but that obviously affects politics, too.
I think we were saying the same thing here. It's like by Wednesday or so, when everybody was so, you know, when CNN was showing pictures of, God help us all, with pictures of, you know, video footage of a men's room in Minneapolis. I mean, that's what we were focusing on. The Gonzalez thing was completely gone. I mean, it just seems so weird. He's not going to resign. He's not going to resign. He's not going to resign. He resigned. And there was no explanation for why he decided to resign now. Now, I mean, not that the Democrats are laying back. They're still going to try to investigate, get to the bottom of the U.S. attorney's thing, and, you know, the erosion of constitutional liberties, what we've seen with the edicts coming out of the Justice Department. But you're right, the issue seemed to not only off the front pages, but off talk radio, off the conversations that people are having. Now, it'll resume again once President Bush decides to name a successor. He could do an in-your-face, like Ted Olson, conservative type, that would get Democrats really angry, and we'll spend the next 12 to 14 months just fighting over it, or he could do a conciliatory move, maybe somebody that, you know, Democrats could like a, you know, a John Danforth or somebody like that. But Bush has never shown the willingness to just be conciliatory. I mean, he just feels that he was elected and, you know, he has the pulpit and this it's his way or the highway. I mean, we saw that with a lot of things going on. It's not so much a criticism of President Bush. I think it's just a reality of the way he just, you know, handles things. The difference, of course, is Karl Rove is gone also, and you wonder if maybe some of Karl Rove's bravado disappears as well.
So why do you think Gonzalez resigned last week?
Well, he wanted to spend more time with Larry Craig's family.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, Ken. Nothing had changed. That's the thing. I mean, people say, well, you know, his reputation in the Justice Department is gone. His credibility on Capitol Hill is gone. But that's been true for months. I mean,
nothing
really happened. The only thing that seemed to happen within the proximity of his resignation was Karl Rove's announcement. And I don't know if maybe by Karl Rove resigning, then all the attention, all the pressure goes on to Gonzalez. And Gonzalez really never was able to answer, seemed to be able to defend himself like other people in the administration. He just seemed like he just didn't answer questions. I mean, it just would frustrate not only Democrats, but Republicans as well.
Yeah. So thanks very much for the call. Joan is next from Dodge County. Hi, Joan.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I would like to know, why does everybody think it's so funny about Craig? And
I don't think it's funny. Who do you think thinks it's funny?
Everybody laughs. You can't imagine the comments on all the radio stations, and they laugh about it, and they think it's... Yet Bill Clinton can come out and say, now Wednesday night, he's going to say how he could save the world. Why didn't he do that when he was in office? Instead of he brought discretion upon Monica Lewinsky, and everybody forgot about that, but here he is. Going to be the center of something. You know, we ought to question a man's character thoroughly before we go into it. And maybe Craig should have, maybe there should have been something more. But maybe the man needs help.
Ken.
Well, you know, this interesting thing. First of all, there was no dearth of Clinton jokes during Monica Lewinsky's as well. I mean, you couldn't turn on Jay Leno or any of the comedy shows, and Bill Clinton would be lampooned from, you know, the beginning of the day to the end of night. But there's something about character that Joan mentions that I think is very important, because the rumors, the hints about Bill Clinton were there well before he was elected president in 1992. And the stories about Larry Craig have been there. I mean, Larry Craig was first elected to the House in 1980. In 1982, there were already rumors about his sexuality, and there was, you know, he was denying that he was gay and all that stuff. And it comes out periodically. It came out last year during the Mark Foley thing. They asked, once again, the local newspaper in Idaho was doing an investigation, and Larry Craig said, oh, I'm not gay, as he did again this week. But I agree one thing. It's not funny. It's very tragic. It's part. I mean, people say, well, he's a hypocrite. He voted for the Defense of Marriage Act, but he has a gay lifestyle or a gay private life. To me, it's just a tormenting situation that is not worthy of potty jokes and Tory jokes and things like that you saw nonstop on TV last week.
Yeah, I agree. Ken Rudin, our guest, political editor for National Public Radio. It's all things political this hour of the program. And our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. One line is open. If you would like it, it is yours. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up following the news from National Public Radio, the author of Well-Behaved Women Seldom Make History. It's a really interesting book. And actually, the woman who coined that phrase in a very scholarly publication that she wrote back in 1982, she had no idea that it would become a slogan that was on bumper stickers and pins and all over. She will be with us to talk about some extraordinary women in history. All right, back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number, and we go to Steve from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We've had a lot of fall guys, top-level administration officials, resigning from the Bush administration. And I wonder if now that we're starting to run out of things to take the fall, do you think that we can infer that Bush himself will start to have to start, you know, take responsibility in the public arena, if not legally, for his actions, then at least sort of in the public eye that he'll be condemned more without guys in front of him.
Well, taking responsibility for what? I mean, I'm not sure exactly I understand the question. Certainly he's trying to go to the American people about his trying to defend his war policy, but take responsibility for what? I'm not sure of the question.
I guess my question is, you know, people are resigning because they've been condemned in the public eye, but in the end, they're really his subordinates, and they have taken responsibility for the actions of the administration at large. I guess I just wonder if we'll see more scrutiny of Bush, the man, now that some of his men are out of the picture.
Well, you actually, I don't know if you're asking this question, but I'm listening to your question, you make a very good point, and the fact is, when people were upset about the war, they say, well, Rumsfeld must go. When they're upset about, you know, civil liberties, they say, well, Gonzales must go. But, Steve, you make the important point that this is the president. Rumsfeld works for the president. Gonzales works for the president. They carry out his directive. So it's really been Bush policy all along, and it's kind of interesting that we do seem to focus on the underlings, the Harriet Meyers, Donald Rumsfeld's, the Alberto Gonzales of the world, and not focus their attention on President Bush. I guess your point is that now that all those other guys are gone, you know, there's nobody to hide behind, like as in the Wizard of Oz. But I don't think President Bush is hiding. I think he said, look, this is my policy, and, you know, you take it or you like it or you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the polls, obviously a lot of people don't like him.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean, though, for this presidency to have these, particularly Rove, out of the picture now? Does it diminish his presidency? Are there not as many people working on policy? Is it a sign that, well, we're just going to coast the rest of the way because things aren't going very well? It's a lot of resignations, Ken.
Well, but it's not an unprecedented number. I mean, if you look at all the end of the two-term presidents, the end of Reagan, the end of Clinton, a lot of people were gone.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few people who lasted all 8 years. One thing that President Reagan did after '88, he was hampered. He was tormented by Iran-Contra, and a lot of his old cronies and buddies left, and he got a lot of new people, and he weathered the storm. I don't think, you know, unlike Iran-Contra, which seemed to disappear at the end of Reagan, this war is not going to disappear. It's obviously going to go into well into 2008, 2009. So it's hard to make the case that anything really changes, even though the personnel might change.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. We go to another Steve from La Crosse. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I wanted to leave a comment and then a question for your guest. Regarding Senator Craig from Idaho, I don't know what it is about Republicans who campaign on family values and this and that, but this isn't the first time a Republican has been caught being hypocritical on this. I think in his case, it was the ridicule that killed him. He could have maybe survived the legal issues. He was trying to fight that. He had his own version of the story. But once you're on Jay Leno and they're just, you know, outrageous jokes at his expense, I think you're done. My question is, there's a couple of Republican presidential candidates that also have interesting personal lives in their relationships, specifically Rudy Giuliani and his three marriages. His present wife is kind of controversial. Newt Gingrich might be getting into the mix, and he's had some problems with infidelity as well. And also our other candidate, I'm thinking of Thompson. Fred Thompson has also got a very interesting wife and controversial as well. Now, what role should personal lives of candidates play when you're judging, you know, what kind of performance they'll have as president? I guess that's my question.
Okay.
Well, if you're talking about Giuliani's marriages and Newt Gingrich's marriages, then in 1992 we talked about Bill Clinton's marriage. I mean, Bill Clinton didn't have multiple wives, but he did have multiple girlfriends, and it was documented. And questions, totally throughout the whole 1992 campaign was about his character and about his, you know, is this the kind of guy you want in the White House? Some people cared, but again, if you had an awful economy as you had in 1992, some things are more important. The thing with Larry Craig, there is what's interesting about that is that, you know, David Vitter, the senator from Louisiana, also went through ridicule when his name appeared on the D.C. Madam's list. They found out he was frequenting, may have been frequenting a prostitute in New Orleans. I mean, that's disgraceful. Nobody frequents prostitutes in New Orleans. But the point is, one, it was a heterosexual scandal, not a homosexual scandal. I wonder if that had something to do with it. But also, Larry Craig pled guilty, and David Vitter didn't plead guilty on anything. That's part of it as well. And also, in Louisiana, you have a Democratic governor. If David Vitter was going to resign, he would have been replaced by a Democrat, and the Republicans did not want that to happen. They know that in Idaho, there's a Republican governor. You would have had a Republican successor, and therefore, you know, it's easy to wipe the slate clean by Larry Craig getting rid of Larry Craig.
Don't you think there's also something to the fact that it's in a public restroom in a Minneapolis airport, too? There's something, what's the word, kind of seedy about the whole thing.
It's seedy, but it's also tragic.
I agree, it's tragic.
You know, you have a wife, you have a family, you're in a public office for nearly 30 years.
And you keep saying, I'm not gay.
And you vote, you know, you're a pro. Matter of fact, there's a video that was on Mitt Romney's website until he took it off last week. But Larry Craig saying the reason I back Mitt Romney is because he's a pro-family, you know, he's a proud pro-family conservative. So, I mean, people talk about hypocrisy, and I know there's truth to that, but to me it's just a tragic torment, you know, tormenting between what you feel as a conservative Republican you should be saying and what's the reality of your private life. It's very sad.
Yeah, I'm with you. Daniel from Rice Lake, hi.
Hello. Last week Bush ominously said, I have authorized our military commanders in Iraq to confront Iran's murderous activities. I heard an interview with Ron Paul last week. He said the Bush administration will attack Iran within 1 year. Peering into your crystal ball, was Ron Paul right?
Boy, did you know something? To me, I mean, it's frightening. It's frightening because nothing seems, very little seems to be going right in Iraq. Whatever you thought about Saddam Hussein, he was at least a buffer between what was going on in Iran and what was going on in Iraq. And yes, they would kill each other and they would have these wars and everything, but it didn't endanger the rest of the world. And somehow, the thought of threatening Iran and this talk about, you know, knocking out their nuclear capability, this is just too scary to speculate. I could speculate whether Fred Thompson will make a difference in Iowa, but this is far more important and far scarier. Actually, I'd rather just close my eyes and say, please, God, no. But it's out there. People are talking about it. You know, there's more and more interceptions of Iranians, you know, coming into Iraq, and people, a lot of them being held by the military. So it's scary.
Thanks, Daniel.
I wish I had a more cohesive, coherent answer, but it's just a very frightening scenario out there.
It was a good answer. Jillian from Barron, hi.
Hi. This is a hard question to ask because I'm not sure there's an answer, but let me do it. Our foreign policy is deep down, is there a way that our foreign policy could be made more honest? Are our leaders and presidents afraid to tell us, you know, look, we have a position of power, and we want to keep this position of power, so we're going to do X, Y, and Z? Or do we really seriously have humanitarian interests, whether it's the Middle East or all the trouble that we get into with other countries? My question's not real clear. So if your guest can kind of read between the lines, I guess it has to do with honesty.
Okay,
take my answer off.
All right, Jillian,
well,
thanks.
You know, it's a good question, and certainly the lack of honesty in foreign policy is not a new issue. Just think Vietnam. There was so much dishonesty about that. But the difference a lot of people see about this war is that whatever trappings we got into around the Vietnam, this seemed, a lot of people feel that this was predicated on a lie to begin with. Now, some people say that, no, this was either trying to redraw the map of the Middle East, or there were weapons of mass destruction, or they wanted regime change in Iraq. But the point is that there's a feeling that whatever lies or mistruths or lack of faulty evidence, faulty intelligence that got us involved, somehow, you know, the candidates are going to have to reason with level with the American people in 2008 about what they plan to do. And even if you listen to Hillary Clinton and, you know, Mitt Romney and those candidates, they still don't seem to be any kind of genuine, heartfelt answering about what they plan to do and how they're going to get out, because nobody seems to know.
30 seconds. Good question. We only have 30 seconds, but you can answer in that amount of time. Jim from West Salem. Hi.
Good morning. Why is it that Bill Richardson isn't getting any traction?
All right.
Well, he is actually. Of course, you do have the rock stars of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and to a lesser extent, John Edwards. But he is, you know, he's still in double digits in Iowa. I think he's like 14% in the last poll. And again, for somebody who doesn't have a lot of money, but he's a folksy campaigner, good commercials, and again, a lot of dominoes have to fall in front of him if he's going to get the nomination. But he's certainly doing better than Chris Dodd and Joe Biden, who have over 50 years between them experience in Congress.
Ken, thank you. I always look forward to these conversations. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Ken Rudin, political editor for National Public Radio, writes the Political Junkie column. He has a weekly podcast, It's All Politics, and you hear him on Talk of the Nation with the Political Junkie show on Wednesdays. He's been covering politics since the 1966 midterm elections. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thank you, everybody, for all of your calls, for all of your interest in all things political, which normally you hear Mondays. Yesterday was Labor Day, so we hate to miss this kind of show, so we just made it Tuesday. We'll be back to Mondays next Monday. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.